Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24.
Welcome to the ITSP Magazine Podcast Network. You're listening to a new episode of the Leadership Student Podcast with MK Palmore. We are all lifelong learners, and nowhere is this more relevant than in the practice of leadership. Our goal is continual learning and improvement. Let's get after it. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Okay, folks, here we go. This is MK Palmore, and welcome to another episode of the Leadership Student Podcast. As you well know, if you've been a listener, we try and have deep and meaningful conversations with leaders in industry across all business verticals in an effort to extract those morsels of experience from the leaders that we speak to so that you can take those morsels and ingrain them into your own leadership experience. I'm excited to have David Lilleflorn in the virtual studio today. David and I have known each other for a number of years. We're college classmates, both veterans. David has always impressed me as an individual who I think shows up in a very unique and positive way. And I think his experiences will be enlightening. And of course, the conversation will be a good one. So here we go. Dave, appreciate you joining us here on the Leadership Student Podcast.
Glad to be here. I'm looking forward to our discussion.
So I want to jump right in because you are at a unique juncture, I think, from a leadership standpoint. You're in the process. You've recently taken over a role as the CEO of a company called Sunracer. Tell us about who you guys are in the market and what you intend to do there.
Yeah, so Sunracer, we are a pre-notice to proceed, provide capital to pre-NTP developers across the country. And what we do is we partner with these developers to build renewable solutions for large-scale consumer and industrial customers. And so right now, currently, we have about 4,000 megawatts of projects, about 21 projects across the country, where we're building standalone PV solar and PV solar plus battery or standalone battery projects at this time.
So what's interesting in the renewable space, in the energy space, is that it's a field, I think, that's ripe for disruption. With that disruption, though, I think the folks like yourself who are forging into this area are getting unique experiences because you're building in an area where success is not a given. So there's got to be some trepidation, got to be some sort of, hey, let's be very strategic and thoughtful about planning and how we proceed. And I want to touch on the unique nature of building a new leadership team. So you go into this, I don't know how you were approached about the opportunity or whether or not it was self-developed. You're the CEO. Take us into your thought process about how you think about building a new leadership team, which is going to be at the core of decision-making for this new apparatus?
Great question. Basically, it starts back my history, right? This role was established coming in the Navy for 8 years, doing the general, working for GE for about 5.5 years in manufacturing, GE Lighting, part of the business. And then 18 years at Constellation Energy, that was about where the meat of my experience, at least in the industry, came out of. And during that time, along the way, meeting in the industry, it led to this point last May where I was asked to be the CEO of Sunracer. And all of my experience coming to this point and pulling this all in was the reason I came on board. And when we started, we had 3 employees. We had a pipeline. We had established partnerships established with industry partners. And over the last 8 months, I've grown my team. We're going to have our 14th employee join on February 12th. And so building this team is probably the most important thing you can do, because the one thing you want your people around you that, you know, we want to drive certainty of execution, right? So we have a team that can deliver and be cohesive. So taking all those experiences I've had over the years from being in the Navy, being in GE, being at Constellation, I had a time now to take all that in my toolkit and go, let's go build a team in an industry I've been around a long time. I don't call it work. This is exciting for me. It's exciting for the people I'm bringing in because they're seeing something, a growing company as Sunracer in an industry that is needed with a pipeline and partners that we have. It's exciting. So the dynamic is hiring the right people. And we always, the adage is right, you got to put the right person on the right seat on the bus. And one of the things you got to do is you got to make sure you take the strengths and the weaknesses of the team. No matter what, you're not, we're all going to have that on a team. But balancing that, putting the people in the right position, giving them the tools they need to be successful. As you grow, you got to be conscious of all of that.
I'm sure that you've had experience in team building before. One of the unique challenges, I think, is in recognizing both when you've gotten it right and maybe when you've gotten it wrong. You're probably too early in this particular cycle to have determined that maybe someone's not right for a particular position. But historically speaking, what's been your experience with when you get it wrong? Maybe you've placed someone with talent in a position where they're not necessarily going to be successful. What tools have you utilized in order to make sure that you set people up for success and maybe make shifts and changes in the team dynamic so that you can reach a higher level of success?
Something I've always done, and you got to put time in your people. So one of the things I do with all my people that work for me is we have weekly meetings. We literally sit down, talk about what's working, what's not working, what can I do better, what can I do for you to get roadblocks out of your way. And during that, there's going to be some, when you get someone in some board that says maybe that's not up to speed or not getting it, I always go, what tools can I get you to make get you to a level where you feel comfortable? And if we can't get there, you have the hard conversations as well and say, if you can't get there, these are the things I need you to do. And if you can't get there, we got to talk about what that means for us or where's your strengths. Maybe I can put you towards that area versus maybe somewhere else. But yeah, they have the tough conversations early. You got to set expectations early and understand the capabilities. Because when people come in after an interview and you feel good about them and they see their resume and what they can do, it all goes back to what's their capabilities today and how can they adapt? Because changes, people come to different companies and join. 18 years of Constellation, I'm coming to a small company that I'm going to grow. That's a change even for me. So if someone coming from a utility, coming into a small company that was always, this is the way we do business versus now you might be doing work all hands on deck kind of stuff. Like, you know, you're not in a silo. You might have to do other people's work. So there's going to be change there that people are not used to. You got to work through that. People can work through that change. So I try to do that with the one-on-ones I have on my team, understanding what's working, what's not, and how can I help them be successful.
I'm glad you mentioned the idea of one-on-ones. From your vantage point, what role does transparency play in how those one-on-one sessions go? Like, how transparent do you need to be in order for those meetings to be effective?
You got to be open and honest, right? I think out the gate, you got to be able to say it's hard, right? I know through my years, Navy, or even sometimes in the career you have, here's your performance review, sign it, here's your paycheck. That does nothing for your culture, your team, or anything else. So you got to be able to communicate and say what's your strengths, what your weaknesses, what your success is. So you got to be transparent that way, open communications. And if you do it out the gate, then the dialogue just becomes normal. There's no surprises. If every 6 months you do a midterm review and you didn't do any communication in between or talked about the goals that were being met or not met, you just meet every 6 months and then the year in review, you've lost the potential from everybody in your team. There should be no surprises where people sit as you go through the year. It should be like, I know where I sit. People do know how they're performing. Sometimes people feel like we're all overinflated what we think, how great we're doing, but you need people to put you back and say, this is what reality is, or at least the perception of what we think you're doing. So having that open, transparent, I think it's important.
So I mentioned that you're venturing into a territory where there is not a guarantee of success. Clearly, you need to have developed some resilience as both a leader and just someone who's a professional. Where does that resilience come from for you? Where did that start and how did you build that in yourself?
It's a great question. We're all part of our environment. I got to go back to, you probably know, is now. My dad was enlisted 17 days before his 18th birthday. He served in 30 years in the Navy as a Master Chief Corpsman. My mom was a Marine. She enlisted when she was 18. So having structure at the helm was a good start for at least me and my family. But also having a dad that was deployed, having a mom that worked, just part of my environment is you got to be resilient. You got to make things happen. You got to be a self-starter. No one's there to do it for you. And you just got to be able to wake up and go, let's go do this. No one else is going to do it. So I having that growing up that way, and then going right to the Naval Academy and going, here you go. The structure, it's kind of all kind of evolved resilience. In the military, as we know, you learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about dynamics. You learn almost everything. It's almost like I say, I was very lucky to go to the Naval Academy and play football because I have that team sport. I'm in the military. What a leadership learning factory we went to. It just really exposed us to everything that good leadership, okay leadership, bad leadership, and on the field and off. So I thought learning all that and resilient, I've taken it all here to say, I tell my team when they tell me that, oh my God, we have something going on, it might be challenging. You know what I tell them? I said, let's make this fun. This is a learning experience. Let's attack it in a positive way. No matter what comes in front of us, let's just make sure this is something that we can do together and let's try to make it fun while we're doing it. So that's how I, like, kind of a long answer of my journey, but how I just take day by day. And today is the best day we got going.
That's a great answer. Hey, so I've known you as an athlete. In fact, I think over the years, 30 plus, close to 40 almost, that we've known each other.
We're getting up there.
Yeah, we're getting up there. I always think athletics first when I think Dave Lilliflorn. What role did athletics play in that building of resilience and maybe your experiences in leadership?
I tell the story not too often. My dad, being a Mass Chief Corpsman, he looked at me in ninth grade and said, he goes, son, we don't have anything before you go to college. I think sports might be your way. And so when he told me that in ninth grade, I said, I'm going to study and I'm going to get good at a sport. And so I dove into football, mm-hmm. dove into the books. And I always tell my wife, I said, listen, that sports changed my life because it opened the door to the going to the Naval Academy. And I think to this day, if I didn't have that combo, and we do know, I don't think we could get in the academy today, my friend. I don't know about that.
I know I could not. I don't know about you. I served a couple of years as a BGO or blue and gold officer. Mm-hmm. I've seen and also participated from the congressional level in terms of nominations and interviewing candidates. Just so impressed with the resumes of students today. And like you just said, mine from high school, I feel absolutely lucky that you and I came up during the time that we did and the opportunity that we got to go there because I could not get in today.
Oh my God, I hear you on that. And just go back to the football thing. I just said this recently about, I was an old lineman, right? So you have five people on the line, guys I play with, best friends to this day, we still talk. You learn so much, person next to you, but when you're on a team, everyone has to do their job. And if someone, five guys on the line and one guy doesn't do their job, the quarterback sacked, what you do is you lift them up, you build them up, we try to work together, we work harder. Because we all have to be doing it, doing our jobs all at the same time to be successful. And I say the same thing on building this team. We all got to be able to own our position, own our responsibility, work together. Don't be siloed. Collaborate. Learn from one another. Leverage each other's strengths to help you in your areas. So I take that from football. You get the guard covering the center. It's that translation in my brain of, playing football for so long. I think I added up. I think I played from rec ball to 17 years of football. Having that every day and learning that, it's hard not to take that into your life. As I grow this company and as we move forward, it's always part of my DNA.
So you've touched on this now a couple of times, and it's an interesting vantage point. One, it is baked into your DNA. I think for most of us that have served in the military, we understand that reliance on positions, right? If everyone does their individual job, then collectively you have a team effort that is then capable of accomplishing things. If I proffered to you that I would tell you, I don't think that comes naturally to everyone. Yep. How do you overcome that? How do you get people to understand who don't have those transitional experiences like having served in the military or played athletics? How do you get people to understand positional responsibility and that as long as you're doing your role, and the person to your left and right are doing their roles, that collectively you're making progress? How do you embed that in folks who don't have that experience?
Yeah, I reverse engineered for me. When I left the Navy and went into GE, I'm glad I went to GE because it was military light. They move right around every 2 years. They give you a training program. They have all these processes. You got to follow the, And then I went to Constellation. It wasn't that. So every change, it goes back to the culture, right? Of what it is. And so I had to learn, whoa, not everyone does, not everyone comes to work on time, or yeah, they don't get in trouble for it. Or everyone doesn't, someone doesn't do their job, someone else picks it up, and that person's still there. And so people are working harder than the person next to you. Learning from that and going, how do you pull people in? It's the team atmosphere. I think this remote that's going on since COVID, you know, we're still doing all these meetings and less travel. Even my small team being remote, they're all over the country. I'm getting them together, and I'm making a point of that, is getting people together to work together, to understand, because there's people that I worked with at Constellation, I worked for a decade and never was in a room with them. It was just talking over the phone, and I think, you know, you lose something. So getting people on board, knowing that we're a collective team goal, that we're all going to, you know, do the prize, is very important. And that goes back to my time. I just want to interject a story about when I was at GE and I got my first union. I ran an IBEW union shop and a UAE shop for GE assembly plant. And I had three shifts, about 161 employees. And my boss came in and said, Dave, you're in charge of this plant, and I'm going to come back in 3 weeks, and you're going to walk around, and you're going to introduce me to everybody that we see. And that was his first, that was my first request of me.
I love it.
And I spent weeks on round-the-clock production, going up, introducing myself, understanding them, their first and last name, what do they do when they're out. And then my boss came 3 weeks, and the test was there. And it taught me a lot about that lesson, about knowing your people, understanding where they're coming from. And the one thing I got out of that was to get, like you said, get people on the same mission. Is in a union shop, you got to pay for their time. So one of the things I did was I would pay on the company dime 30 minutes a month. If you had a birthday, I brought you in a room on your birthday, gave you the entire business update, where we are, why is it important, the things we're doing. So everyone in throughout the company got the same message from me, understanding why we're doing it, what we're doing it, good, bad, or indifferent. And so when we walked around, there was no surprises. So when everyone asked how the company's doing, everyone knew. I think that lesson for me was getting everyone on the same page, same message, because what happens in leadership is the leader tells your direct reports, this is the thing. And does it get down to as in the Navy, the deck plates, or in the company down to the plants? Yeah, and guess what? It doesn't all the time. And so right. I think that was something, getting like to your question, people might be siloed. How do you get them on the same mission? Is you bring them together and they're hearing from the leader, this is what we're doing. And everyone's hearing that message consistently. And then you get buy-in no matter what your personality is, what department you're in. I think they understand the mission and the goals, and they can rally around that.
Yeah. What you just described is really hard to do, by the way. I hope folks have an appreciation for the difficulty in, you have a ton of responsibilities as a leader and manager. You're saying that in an effort to ensure the cohesiveness of the team, you added on a responsibility to walk the floor, make sure you get to know folks, their individual jobs, aggressively make sure they're getting the messaging about the strategy, purpose, and outcomes, and that kind of thing. It requires work to do that. That's what the leader gets paid for. But I want to make sure that folks have an appreciation for how that kind of intentional presence and engagement takes a lot of energy. How do you maintain that? How are you able to maintain it and do it consistently over time?
Like, well, leadership, you know, be consistent. You know, as a leader, you want to be consistent. But I think the answer to your question about how do I do it is, yeah, what we always talk, you're only as good as your people. So the best investment is going to be in your people. Another analogy in energy is everybody has access to the same technologies, maybe the same processes. It's all about the people who execute on those processes, how they use that technology. It's the people. So investing time and effort, that's where you'll get more out of people, out of the team. If you recognize recognition, job well done. That is something you got to do. You got to take the time. One of the things, I celebrate the wins. People just say, good job, let's get back to it. Stop, take the team out to dinner. We had a great, whatever it might be, celebrate it, make sure it's important, and then you move on. Because I always say the people you with more than your family is the people you work with. So you got to make sure while you're away from your family, invest with the people you're with. When you're home, make sure you're investing the time with your family, that kind of thing. I wake up and I don't call it work. I like the industry I'm in. I get energy from people. Not everyone does. And if you're
like
a leader
the entire time I've known you.
What's that?
I say you've been like that the entire time I've known you. You enter the room with energy. And it's infectious, by the way. People, they get energized from the energy that you bring. And it's a part of your character, I think, that's baked in. And not everyone has that capacity or capability.
And we all play our roles. You can be an extrovert and you got to be, what's the opposite? You got to be a good listener. Any good leader has to be a good listener. We all have our traits that we have to work on. So you got to be, and you also, if you're an introvert, you got to get out of that shell and go, hey, I got to get in front of a bunch of people. You got to talk. So there's no perfect leader. He's got to know what, again, self-awareness, right? We talked about that. Self-awareness of who you are as a leader, because I can drown out people if you're an introvert. You got to be in tune to your audience and understand. And if you get too much energy, people will just sit there and won't say anything. So you got to be able to listen, got to be able to draw out and ask questions, the right questions to people that might not, I know they have something to say, but let's pull them in. And you got to be aware of that as a leader, what you're giving off, how people can receive it. Not all message sent is message received. You just got to be conscious of that. And that's something at least I try to do, knowing that I might have a little bit high energy. And I got to step back sometimes and cool it down, because, again, you can be overbearing at times. So you got to have self-awareness.
Yeah, I love the growth. Lots of positives. Can you talk to us about maybe an incident, single experience that maybe wasn't so positive in terms of your experience that was a big takeaway, big learning experience for you, and how you then incorporated that learning into your future engagements?
Another hard one to talk about, but again, you got to, as a leader, and this will resonate, courage, but it's really about moral courage, right? It's about knowing when you see something, say something. It's hard to do it, especially what position you are in a company. Being a leader, everyone has a boss. It doesn't matter if you're the CEO, everyone has a boss. So you got to be able to, you got to manage expectations. But I think just a general answer here is, in every aspect, you always see things that's not right. That is not how I would do it. But when it comes to right and wrong, or like, this is, how do you handle that? I think a difficult situation as a leader is, my wife was tact, diplomacy, right? You got to go, how do you address these things? It's a difficult challenge. And so I've had a couple that you have to have that moral curse to even go, there's ramifications. But is it that important to you, who you are? And is it going to hurt somebody? Is it down the road going to be dangerous if you don't address it and you feel compelled? It's a challenge. Have I done that? Yeah, I have spoken up. I'll give you a before. And it's easy when maybe you're in a position that can do that and you can recover. Sometimes you can't, but you got to live with yourself and say, did I do the right thing? Did I save something? By not saying something down the road, do I regret not doing something? And I think we've all seen that. I don't know anybody in the world that has not seen something and not said something.
Right.
I think in the world, the answer for today is you got to just dig deep and go, have the courage to do it. And that's probably one of the hardest things to do that I've seen in my career, because I've not always said it. And I had to get to a point where I'm like, you know what? No, this is the right thing to do. And feel confident and do it in the right way. And there might be some circumstances that come out of it, but you can at least sleep at night and say, I did the right thing.
Yeah. Well, that's a fantastic call out. And we don't always get it right, I think, as individuals. You hope, or at least I would hope that most folks aspire to get it right more often than not, but we don't always. One of the questions that I'm grappling with as a student of leadership, and one of the questions that I intend to ask every guest this year on The Leadership Student, is the role that character plays in leadership. It strikes me that maybe as a society, we've gotten to a point where we're really calling out and trying to distinguish between a leader's actions and who they are as people. And I'm curious, from your vantage point, what role you believe character plays in good leadership?
It's a great question. Think about that one for a sec. As leaders, we are leading people from, it doesn't matter. Right now, I'm leading people that are in like multiple states, multiple backgrounds. Being someone that no matter what your background is and who you are you approachable? Are you someone that you don't have to look over your shoulder and say, hey, I did something. Oh my God. No, you wake up every day, you're doing the right thing. You're leading, you're being consistent. And I think character, people gravitate, people want to rally. People want to be led by someone that they know they can trust. So you got to have all those. If you don't have the right character as a leader, you're going to lose your people and you're going to lose their trust. You're going to lose, if they're not going to rally behind the vision. If you're someone that is, preaching, this is how we should do it, but then you're the person that goes out and does the opposite. It's lead by example that we all know. And it's true. And so I think for character, to have those traits is so important to be an effective leader, because you can be 99 attaboys and the one, a leader, you can have bad days, you can make mistakes, you can learn from it, but you got to make sure what those mistakes are not something that's going to compromise who you are as a person. So I would think your character, short answer, is very important in leadership.
Oh, and I appreciate that perspective and I think share it. But I am going to challenge some future guests on what their thoughts are on it, because I really feel like the subject of character has been downplayed somewhat. And you can take from a variety of angles, whether it be in business, society, or otherwise. But I think that people are now starting to put it at a distance. And I don't know that's right for us from a society standpoint. There's certainly examples in business, I think, where we see folks whose characters may be described as one thing and their effectiveness as a leader has been chart topping. So I'm interested in the delta there. Like, why is it capable in some realm to lack character, but still accomplish a lot? And I certainly from the background that we have, we were told from day one that character is like this critical, vital component that like exists at the center of you as a being. In order to be able to build off of it, it has to be a character that in many respects is unimpugnable. And I feel like we're drifting away from that. So I'm just curious.
I know your premise of your question, and I get it. You look at military, you look at the business, you look at government, and you look how people perceive leaders.
Yeah.
You're going to get a different, and also you're going to get a different answer, right? Or a different, I guess the word is a level of expectation. And I think you're saying characters, if you're an effective leader getting things done, but your character might not be as high as at a certain level. And that delta, that's a great question. And it's a great observation, because you're going to get, we're getting different types of leaders with different types of character.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate your observation, distinguish it between like business, government, and the military. And I think the expectations are unique and different. But I guess what I'm trying to tackle eventually is that I think mostly in the business realm, I see that, I don't know, what passes for character or its level of importance might be different. It certainly is different in government. It's the expectation in the military, I would say, is off the charts. Like the expectation, as you well know, it's commissioned officers, is you're this relatively perfect being, and mistakes, although allowed, you want to keep at a minimum, certainly ones that impugn your character. But I don't know. It's one of those things that I intend to tackle over the season. I love your perspective. I think it's interesting. Certainly the distinguishing part, and I intend to challenge all of my guests with probing.
I will tell you why character is important in business for me, though, my friend.
Yeah.
Because when you're establishing partnerships with people, it's all about relationships, right?
Trust, yeah.
So in business, yeah. We're gonna grow a company. We're going to be successful. Great. But it's, you got to do it with people, right? And people you want to work with, people that you know you can trust, people that a partnership, I think, is stronger. So right. In our company, we're working with great partners because we have established relationships, trust, that we have a common vision. And I think people want to work with that. I don't think anyone really, at least in my mind, you're working with someone that doesn't have that relationship, good character, that we're in it to win it kind of thing. So I think in that aspect, what I look for is you want to have people that the relationships established that are strong. And I think that it all goes back to the character of who the people are that you're working with. And, or would you want to work with someone that didn't have good character? That's always a question, right? Hey, they're okay. Do you want to work with them? No, that it goes into it. People get evaluated and people are listening. You get evaluated your character one way or the other. Yeah. So don't think that someone's not, I don't think.
How do you consume leadership lessons outside of your own personal experience? Are you a heavy reader, TED Talks? What's your poison that you picked there?
Yeah, so over the years, I would go, I like to go to a lot of conferences to learn from other thought leaders in the industry, to hear their perspectives. In our industry, going around the country, reading, in my world, you have state by state you do business with. Each state has a government. You got to understand that. Being briefed. We have product coming from around the world. So you got trade. So you got to understand what's going on in the world, in the geopolitics of the world. You know, going to conferences and learning, having presentations coming in and talking about stuff that it's affecting state legislation that might be coming in a certain state that could impact the industry. So I do a lot of that reading versus, and also presentations from industry partners that are getting us up to speed. I read every day. We have some tickers that come in about the industry, and I'm always reading, always learning what other people are doing. And so that's my daily routine. We get those. And again, go to major conferences and getting the people in a room, like, oh, it's getting face to face. And these conferences we have in our business is renewable conferences, or could be, or we have one coming up in March and another one in September that I attend. It's everything, all aspects of the industry. And you learn so much because we're all in it, that ecosystem together. So it's a way of learning.
What's your vision for Sunracer?
That great question. So we obviously are very excited. Our goal is we're growing to be an owner and operator of renewables. But our biggest thing is working with developers over the next 5 to 7 years. We're growing our portfolio. We're sitting here at four gigawatts of power within our 21 projects. We're looking for more acquisition to grow that pipeline as we go over the year. This year alone, we have a very exciting year ahead into 25 and 26 with our pipeline. So we're looking to expand that as we go. And our team's going to grow with it. That's the 3 to 5 year plan, is to grow the pipeline, provide renewable solutions to our, like I said, the consumer industrial companies out there and in the renewable space.
Outstanding. David Lilleflorn, outstanding. Appreciate you taking the opportunity and time to come in the Leadership Student Podcast. Love the conversation. I've loved reconnecting with you on a personal level and look forward to seeing what you guys do there at Sunracer.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. It's, who would have thought all these years later we're sitting here, and I enjoyed it. Yeah, I'm glad what you're doing. This is great, and I appreciate it. Keep going at it.
We'll do. All right, folks. That's it for this episode of the Leadership Student Podcast. We'll see you on the next run. Be sure to like, share, comment, and we'll be seeing you again soon. Thank you.
Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Leadership Student Podcast with MK Palmore, part of the ITSP Magazine Podcast Network. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then add this show to your favorite podcast player. Subscribe to the ITSP Magazine YouTube channel and share the ITSP Magazine Podcast Network with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to connect your brand to our conversations and our audience, visit ITSPMagazine.com to learn how to sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey.